hello there, everyone, and welcome to the newest and greatest podcast in Gainesville. Welcome to the new you. My name is Larry Green. I am the executive and clinical director here at the Gainesville Community Counseling Center. And today we are joined by Ezra Stone, LCSW, right?
Yes.
And we're glad to have you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. In a little while, I'll ask you to introduce yourself and talk about your practice and some issues that you work on. But the purpose of this podcast is to introduce the community to local clinicians to address issues related to mental health. We provide mindfulness tips of the week. We talk about politics. We talk about religion. We talk about anything and everything. And we welcome you to send in your questions. You can find us on the web at www.gainesvillecounselingcenter.com. Or you can give us a call at 352-448-9120. And so we hope that you will subscribe to the podcast. You'll find it on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. And you can find us on YouTube. And we hope that you'll hit that subscribe button down there and share it with your friends. So we do mental health counseling for low-income communities, and so we offer sliding scale fees going down to 50, and we actually have a program now where we can offer free counseling for a couple of years for people who qualify for it. So if you are someone who doesn't have insurance or has insurance that really sucks, like most insurances do, or you just don't have the resources to pay for counseling and you need it, give us a call and we can get you set up with a therapist here. Again, it's 352-448-9120 or GainesvilleCounselingCenter.com. So here at the center, we believe in mindfulness as an approach to many things that we face. And so we incorporate it into our work here at the center. And so I'm going to turn it over to Ezra and ask Ezra and put Ezra on the spot. Do you have a mindfulness activity that you like to do with your clients or yourself?
Yes, thanks, Larry. I absolutely do. This past couple weeks, I've been using a lot of mindfulness with my clients, and an exercise that folks are really enjoying is the leaves on a stream visualization.
Leaves on the stream.
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
So for this exercise, you just want to sit comfortably. You want to relax your breathing and start to imagine a really peaceful place by a moving body of water. And we're lucky to live in North Florida where we have lots of great examples to draw from. Right. And you just work on kind of sitting, noticing your breathing, visualizing this peaceful place. And every time thoughts pop up, you just imagine that those thoughts are leaves and let them drift away down the stream. So we're not necessarily trying to clear our mind or, you know, not think about anything. That can be pretty daunting for people. But we're just working on recognizing what's going on in our brain and then kind of letting it pass by. And I found that this is really helpful for people who deal with, you know, obsessive thoughts or ruminating or feeling very worried, you know, and we just talk about the purpose of the exercise is to notice your thoughts and then bring, you know, let them drift away.
Right. I think a lot of folks think you have to empty your mind at all times if you're doing mindfulness and do that Zen Buddha kind of kind of a thing.
And that's a tall order for most of us.
Yes, right? And so I remember my wife, when I was in seminary, she went to a class on spirituality, and the instructor said, "Now empty your mind." And my wife sat there for like 10 minutes and then got up and walked out and came home early, and I was like, "What's the matter?" She said, "I suck at spirituality. I can't do the empty your mind thing."
Goodness.
And I was like, "I don't know anybody who really can. So you're kind of normal, right?"
Yeah.
And so with mindfulness, it's kind of envisioning, recognizing that thought. Why is it important to recognize and acknowledge that the thought is there?
Yeah, well, in therapy, and I use a lot of DBT in my practice, you know, so we're really kind of always playing with, you know, what are we accepting and what are we changing and what do we have to accept in order to change? And I think this exercise is a great way to do that. We're acknowledging what is happening for us, but then we're working on kindly shifting our attention back to the present. And every time we do that, we get better at doing that.
Right. And for those who don't know, DBT is dialectical behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And I refer to it as CBT on steroids with a little bit of mindfulness and
Absolutely.
A lot of mindfulness in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. So, Ezra, you and I have not met. We've talked on the interwebs via email. So tell me a little bit about you and your practice and how you got here to Gainesville.
Yeah, great. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I studied anthropology of all things in my undergraduate, ended up doing a research project at a homeless shelter. And that's what got me interested in, you know, in social work and in human services. And, you know, anthropology focuses on kind of the big picture of communities and cultures. But what really stuck out to me working there was also how much people needed, you know, help and support and skills on an individual and a family level. So I ended up going on to study social work through Florida State University. When I was in school, though, they had a part-time program that met here in Gainesville on the weekends.
Right.
So that was really fun. I got to go to FSU while sitting in the UF Health Sciences Library. So I studied social work. I've worked in domestic violence. I've worked in community mental health. I've worked with kids and youth in different settings. And for the last year and a half, I've been doing private practice therapy, and I work mostly with trans people and with a lot of college-age people.
Fantastic. So
it's really fun.
I actually pushed the social work program through Florida State because they do have the local option, right, to do it here. So I think it's a great program. And my dad went to FSU, and he bemoans the fact that we live in Florida and live in Gainesville. He says that's horrible.
Well, there's a lot about Florida that is horrible.
That is true. And we'll get into a lot of that.
Gainesville is a sweet place to live.
It is. Now, are you from Gainesville originally?
No, I grew up in Ormond Beach near Daytona. But Gainesville seemed to be a nice progressive place to live, you know, college town vibes,
right,
but a lot of good nature for, you know, hiking and swimming and being outdoors and
stuff
like that.
Do you still have family in Ormond?
I do, yeah. My mom lives over there.
And how did she do during the storm?
She was okay. Her laundry room flooded, but she cleaned it up pretty quickly and didn't lose power for too long.
Yeah, the pictures of the A1A were just amazing.
Yeah.
And they got them rebuilt like overnight. I'm like, I'm not driving on that until I find other people who can test it before I go. But
yeah.
So good. Well, we're glad to have you here. So tell us the clients that you work with. You work a lot with the trans community, with college students, and what sort of, if you had to pick your issues that you work with most, what are you working with?
Okay, great question. Yeah, working with so many young adults, you know, we're dealing with a lot of adjustment reactions, a lot of getting used to college or getting ready to graduate or finding yourself out in the workforce for the first time. You know, so we're doing that, you know, kind of stage of life work.
Right.
And then when we add in, you know, LGBT issues, family issues, everything that's going on politically, you know, some of those more macro issues also come into play. So it's, you know, it's like sometimes we refer to it as like sort of playing on hard mode. It's like it's hard enough to be 22, but then, you know, you're transitioning and the governor hates you and, you know, your family thinks you're going to hell. And it's like, you know,
that's a lot of shit. Absolutely.
So, it's a great stage of life to get some therapy, because if you really work on building those skills for handling things, it serves you throughout the rest of your life.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the Don't Say Gay Bill in a little bit. But tell us, how would folks get in touch with you if they wanted to set up an appointment with you?
Oh, sure. So I have a website. It's stonetherapyandconsulting.com. There is another Stone Therapy and Something that is located elsewhere in the state. I'm hoping that they don't find out and send me a cease and desist letter that my business name is very similar to theirs. But you can find me by Googling me. I've got an email address, ezrastone.lcsw@gmail.com. So I, you know, I see clients for individual therapy. I see clients for assessments if they need a diagnosis of gender dysphoria for top surgery, or, you know, surgeries or medical procedures. So I do those also, just, you know, sometimes I call that like a little gender consult. You know, we meet once, talk about their dysphoria, talk about the surgery that they're trying to have. And that's really important to me, to be able to do those in a single assessment. You know, in the past, people have been held to, you know, weeks or months or years of therapy before being able to access medical transition.
Right. Which is so antiquated, because there's nothing legally requiring a letter or any sort of therapy related to transitioning, but the doctors have held on to that tradition, right? And I think it's more of a CYA thing than anything.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And there's a great book called now I have to remember the name, on being trans and feeling bad. And one of the things they talk about a lot in there is, you know, the medical gatekeeping. And in fact, the whole requirement of getting a psychologist to sign off on someone's transition was totally just a CYA from the doctors. Really, it was partially because the doctors weren't very skilled at doing these procedures and doing these surgeries. So they, you know, were like, well, just in case, like, I fuck up and you don't like it, you know, we can say the psychologist signed off. So, and I always like to validate that and like explain that to clients that, like, I don't think you need a diagnosis to be trans. Like, I wish, you know, I wish this was not the system that we live in. But going back to those DBT skills, you know, we do that radical acceptance and we say, all right, this is the world we live in. How are we going to live in it? And we write their letter and send them on their way to get surgery.
Exactly. Now, so you do telehealth and you do in-person. And so you were saying earlier that your in-person is at the Pride Center. So tell us a little bit about the Pride Center and how you got involved with them.
So the Pride Center is an awesome local resource. And the Pride Center is, in fact, getting a lot busier these days. It was hard during the pandemic. There wasn't a lot happening in person. But the Pride Community Center is an LGBT community center that we have here in Gainesville. There are events throughout the month, every month. I can read the list of events in a moment. They've also got drop-in hours on Monday evenings from 7 to 9 and Saturdays from 2 to 4. So if folks just want to learn about the community, talk to someone who's part of the community. There's a great library of LGBT books. There's a lot of cool ephemera. There's some sections of the AIDS quilt. It's a really special place. So do you want to hear about some of the upcoming events?
Yeah, tell us.
Awesome. So I have a whole list because it's a lot.
That's fine.
So there's an adult social group that started up. And if you want to learn about that, I think that meets once a week or a couple of times a month. You can check out the Pride Center online for details about those meetings. There is a book club that meets the third Sunday of each month. There is a community connections group that happens the first Tuesday of each month. There's a couple of 12-step meetings at the Pride Center. There's a Crystal Meth Anonymous group that meets on Wednesdays at 7, and a free-to-be AA group that meets every Sunday at 7. The Gainesville Area AIDS Project supplies weekly meals and hygiene items to people with HIV and AIDS in the community. So that's a great group to get involved in if people want to, you know, do some service or do a supply drive. There is a group Quit to help people stop using tobacco that meets at the Pride Center. There's free HIV testing once a month on the third Thursday of each month. There is a Pride student meetup for middle and high school students that is... I think that you need to reach out for the specific information because that is not on my list. I think that that group just got started up recently. There is a seniors group for people 50 and older. And there's a group that I run called Rainbow Resilience, which is a mental health discussion group. And that group meets the third Thursday of each month. The third Saturday of each month.
Well, tell us about that program that you're running.
So that's it's been really fun so far. We started that up early in the summer. And basically, it's just, you know, it's free, open to the community. And every month we just have a discussion about some topic related to mental health and LGBT issues. So we've talked about dealing with anger. We've talked about self-care. We've talked about coping with things that are going on politically. And it's just a really nice time to, you know, to connect with peers. To connect with peers, meet new people. And one of the things that we've talked about in the group and I end up talking to my clients about is that it's hard to make friends when you're an adult. You know, and especially if, you know, if you don't drink or you don't party or, you know, you're on the, you know, the other side of your mid-20s, it's hard to figure out how to get out there and meet people. So having these kind of, you know, structured, sober social activities for people, I think is really beneficial, especially for those of us who are anxious or, you know, may, you know, not have the easiest time just chatting and making small talk in a bar or something.
So what are some of the bigger challenges facing the LGBTQIA plus population as it pertains to mental health right now?
So there is a lot. You know, in addition to whatever, you know, whatever stage of life issues that people might be dealing with, or, you know, big life changes like transitions, you know, we've got a lot going on in Florida right now related to, you know, attacks on trans healthcare and the Don't Say Gay bill And, you know, even if people are not directly impacted by that legislation, it still has a huge impact on our mental health.
Sure.
You know, to live in a state where, you know, these policies are being passed, these, you know, politicians are making these public statements, you know, we're being accused of being groomers by the governor's office.
Right.
You know, that takes a real toll on people's sense of safety and people's sense of security. And there's a lot of research that corroborates that, as if we needed it.
You know, right, that's, right. Yeah, we all know it.
Right, we all know it. And, you know, kind of like we were talking about before, it's good to have the data, right?
Right.
To be able to say, and also to be able to show our clients that, you know, this isn't just like you're weak and you can't handle it. It's like it is demonstrated that when we live under these conditions, it is harder to thrive.
Right.
You know, so we call that the minority stress model, you
yep.
know, recognizing that people who are in minority groups or in marginalized groups, you know, face higher levels of stress related to actual experiences of discrimination, you know, the fear of being discriminated against or harmed,
yeah.
And hearing those stories from our friends and peers.
Yeah, it's that vicarious part too that
Definitely.
Is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the legislation, mm-hmm. right? You've got the Don't Say Gay bill, even though they will say nowhere in there does it say don't say gay, but the effect is mm-hmm. that we are diverting attention away from a population mm-hmm. that is part of our life, and so the byproduct is you're teaching people not to say gay
mm-hmm.
to not just the earlier kids, as it's proposed in the bill,
mm-hmm.
but the negative effect, and we've seen it here in Alachua County already,
mm-hmm.
is that teachers, even in high school, are very afraid to address any issues related to gender or mm-hmm. sexuality. Are you seeing that as well mm-hmm. within your population?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing that, you know, GSAs and, you know, gender sexuality alliances and student groups are, you know, being discouraged, or kids are afraid to go to them.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers being told or being implied, or them feeling like they need to take down, you know, any kind of safe place stickers or advocacy or, you know, ally
right.
kind of markings that they might have in their classrooms. So it's definitely had a really big impact on people. And, you know, then the confusion of, you know, everybody is afraid of getting in trouble, but nobody knows what exactly they're actually even supposed to be doing. It seems like it's creating a lot of confusion, which is why I think it's great that the Pride Center is doing a group for middle and high school students. So there are places,
yeah.
you know, for queer and trans and questioning young people to meet up outside of their schools.
Right. Well, and that's why we're also going to be offering a group session for high school, middle.
Oh, awesome.
I don't remember, but
under
18s, because of the negative effects that we're seeing here in our practice, for our population of clients, that identify as LGBTQIA+.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. We're seeing a lot of fear,
mm-hmm.
Within that population that, you know, the straight community by and large has no concept of,
mm-hmm.
right? And if, anyway, so we can go on and on about that. So, what are some ways that parents can help their kids who are in school and are seeing these ally stickers being taken down and are living within that context and not knowing who's safe, who's not safe? Mm-hmm. What are some things parents can do to help their child?
That's $1 million question, isn't it?
I get $1 million, yes.
Yeah, so I think, you know, parents have a great opportunity right now to, you know, to be supportive of their own children, to signal in whatever ways they can their support of other people's children who might not be getting that at home or at school. And if, you know, if school is becoming more of a hostile place for mm-hmm. queer and trans young people, that, you know, parents can help their kids and their kids' friends get involved, you know, in groups and seek out support, and just provide some role modeling
sure.
of what adults, you know, how adults can be. 'Cause I think that's, you know, that's really important for kids if they're seeing, you know, in their homes or their schools that these issues are being silenced, that they are at least able to get a counterpoint from, you know, Susie's moms or,
right.
you know, Jimmy from church or whoever.
Yeah. So just being that resource and supportive system, I think sometimes parents think they have to have all the answers. And what I tell them is, no, you don't. Mm-hmm. It's okay to say, I don't know, but we can find out together mm-hmm. what Absolutely. Those answers are. You know, the major population that I get worried about are those kids who are not quite sure mm-hmm. and they're still discovering themselves
yeah.
and don't have that avenue now to turn to a supportive teacher mm-hmm. or to turn to anyone in the school system, really. So the fact that if they do come out, even to a counselor at school, they're now required to divulge that information to parents. Mm-hmm. What will that do you think, to these kids who are struggling with, am I gay? Am I bi? Am I trans? What am I?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can create really dangerous situations. We know from the research that especially trans and non-binary young people are at very high risks of suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts. And, you know, we also know that validating and confirming and affirming people's gender identities really decreases those risks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there definitely are a lot of young people that are at risk with their mental health and at risk for their safety. And every time, you know, they see those things that are happening in the media, they see what's happening in politics, mm-hmm. you know, that reinforces a sense of hopelessness.
And, right.
We know from therapy that a sense of hopelessness is really dangerous.
Sure, sure. Because when you lose that hope, then you don't see an avenue out right. or a way forward. And it doesn't help that the state medical board now mm-hmm. has come out with their policy banning mm-hmm. anything related to transition medically for, was it anyone under 18? Is that what it is?
I believe so, yeah.
That's incredible to me. And so their excuses are, and their decision, I don't know if you listened to any of the testimony or heard about any of the testimony, but all of their testimony came from proponents of banning mm-hmm. transitional medication and procedures. And all of it was based off of faulty science, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, what I always tell parents is, you know, are there dangers related to transitioning? Yeah, they're medically, when you're introducing stuff into the body, there's always the potential of some danger. But by and large, transitioning medically is safe. Puberty mm-hmm. blockers are safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's a permanent thing.
Right.
It can be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, that's the state saying to this population, you don't know what you're doing. You're just going through a phase.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they kept pointing out was that if we give these kids time mm-hmm. over time, they will identify that they were just in a phase. And I giggled at that because mm-hmm. the reality is, no, it wasn't that they decided it was just a phase. It was that they decided it's not safe to truly identify who I am
right.
to anybody. But the other side sees that as, oh, they just came out of a transition. They mm-hmm. just came out of a phase of life. What are your right. thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, this idea of a phase, you know, if your kid were going through a phase, okay, kids go through phases. Like, mm-hmm. you don't stop your kid from playing baseball because it's just a phase and they're not going to be in the major leagues. You know, you let your kids experiment and learn about themselves and
sure.
you support them in developing their interests and their passions and who they are. And, you know, it is very, very infrequent that people detransition, mm-hmm. especially people who've experienced dysphoria after puberty. You know, and so on the very slim chance that your kid does not decide to transition after all, like, okay, like, are you going to be nice to them and show them that you support them experimenting and learning about themselves? Or are mm-hmm. you going to say, like, oh, well, I'm going to bully you now just in case you're not sure.
Right.
You know, that sends a really horrible message. And, you know, we know from the data that most trans people keep being trans.
Right.
And we can't make people stop being trans by denying them transition.
Right.
You know, we shove people in the closet so that they can feel safer, so that they can survive. But, you know, a lot of those people, you know, and I have met clients and worked with clients who tried to come out in early adolescence, you know, went back in the closet and came back out in their early 20s.
Sure.
You know, when they had more autonomy.
Right. They could make their own decisions.
Absolutely. And they had their own money.
and their safety mm-hmm. and their own place to live and, yeah. and that sort of stuff. Yeah. It's also kind of comical to me that the only piece of data that the opponents use related to transition is the study out of Sweden, mm-hmm. which there was one piece in there that seemed to highlight the fact that transitioning would lead to a higher incidence rate of suicide. Mm-hmm. And so they keep saying that, right? That they'll push that one bit of information in that report, in that study. However, the author of that study has repeatedly come out and said that's not what the study says. What mm-hmm. the study says is that the lack of support systems mm-hmm. after transition does have a negative impact on people's health.
Right.
But the same can be true for everybody, mm-hmm. right? It's not just transitioning. If you have an at-risk youth who's straight mm-hmm. and doesn't have that support system, there's a higher rate of suicide in that population yeah. as well. But it's amazing how they twist and they lie and they manipulate mm-hmm. with these studies.
Yeah.
And then we get to deal with that right. on a local level. Mm-hmm. How does the Pride Center address those issues or politic around those issues mm-hmm. or do they?
Well, let's see. I mean, I think the big things that the Pride Center does is, you know, create community spaces and host, you know, ways for people to get together and to organize. One amazing thing that the Pride Center did, I have to flip my paper over so I can get my stats about this, is, you know, producing those narratives that run counter to what certain people in the public eye are saying about the queer community. And so, for instance, the Pride Festival that happened here in Gainesville last month, there were 98 vendors, all day entertainment, and an estimated 6,000 people who came.
Oh, wow.
So I think, you know, making those spaces where people can get together, where people can celebrate, where people can learn about what's going on in the community, you know,
sure.
connect with folks who are like-minded, you know, that's really key. Support is really key for all of our survival, right? We don't live under bell jars. We don't live on islands. Like, we live in community. And so being able to connect with others, I think, is really important for our mental health and for our ability to do activism and organizing. And
yeah.
And going back to the, you know, the Pride Festival, all of that was done by a board of 8 people.
Wow.
So
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And so
now, are you on the board?
I am not on the board. No, I am.
Would you like to be? I'll nominate you. That was a big sigh, Ezra.
I've got a lot on my plate.
Is that a no?
That is a no. No, I'm not ready to be on anybody's board right now. You know, but I was specifically asked to say that if there were more board members and more people, more chairs and more volunteers, the sky's the limit.
Yes.
That's what Faith, the treasurer, said. So I might not have the capacity to be on the board of the Pride Center, but they definitely are looking for more yeah. people to get involved and help plan community events. And network and keep being a resource yeah. to the community.
Well, I think the Pride Center is really under transition right now. You know, for years, you had Terry, who was there and mm-hmm. Ran everything and did everything and was just a beast when it came to, you know, the politics. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the transitional pieces that the Pride Center is facing now is, how do you take everything Terry did and have other people do it?
Yeah.
Like the festival, you know, has historically been a Terry thing, and mm-hmm. he kind of directed everything, and it was nice to see the board working together to make it happen. And I'm sure for them it was a new learning opportunity, because everything was really in Terry's mm-hmm. head. And so, you know, when he died, that kind of went alongside, but I think they did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was a really exciting day.
Yeah,
so
it was
great to see so many people,
especially after
out
2 years of, mm-hmm. of being gone.
Yeah,
and then having the entertainment throughout the day, mm-hmm. I think, was fabulous.
Yeah,
and doing that, so I did miss the parade. I would not have walked, but I missed the parade. But I think we were the only Pride Festival in the northern part of the state that did not have protesters.
Wow.
Orlando had protesters. Jacksonville had protesters. Ocala had protesters. In Gainesville, we were nice and peaceful, which I think was speaks volumes to this area.
Yeah.
And folks knowing that if they had shown up, they would have been run off pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So, but the Pride Center has experienced some hate of its own recently. And how are they recovering from that?
Yeah, so the Pride Center is well on their way to repairing the damage from the vandalism that happened last month. There's been a ton of support that's come from our local community and from around the country. So there were over 600 donations that came in from around the country.
Fantastic.
Showing their support and showing their solidarity.
Yeah.
And the Pride Center is still active and is going to keep being active. Keep doing what they're doing. And I'm really excited to be a part of it and to be involved there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a shock to the community. I know they weren't the only targets that weekend, but it was the timing of it was very questionable. That just highlights the fact that it's not just individuals, it's organizations mm-hmm. that are supportive, what is the right call it, the pushing the gay agenda, which, by the way, did you know there's a show, is it Netflix or is it, it's called The Gay Agenda, and it's a series of short films that mm-hmm. talks about the gay agenda. I've yet to watch it. I didn't know there was an agenda that the gay community had, but mm-hmm. there seems to be an agenda that the right thinks mm-hmm. that they have, right? Like it's taking them now to drag queens.
Right.
Like, I didn't realize that drag queens were really bad for kids. I didn't realize that it was bad for them to read to kids. But now they're trying to criminalize mm-hmm. taking your kid to a family-friendly drag show.
Yeah. It's really ridiculous, and I will show my cards. I'm 35 years old. You know, mm-hmm. I was starting high school around 9/11. So I was a teenager during, sort of the early 2000s kind of conservative era.
Mm-hmm.
And so this does just seem like sort of the next generation of, of that gay panic that happened in the 80s, it happened in the early 2000s. And, now it's really focused around trans people and acting as if there's this, these like radical cyborgs that are trying to like make everybody be these like genderless
trans, yes.
automatons using some really nasty and ugly language.
Sure.
And there have always been queer people, there have always been trans people, and there will continue to be queer and trans people, and really the the gay agenda or the trans agenda is be nice,
leave us alone,
go to
let
therapy,
us live,
mind your own business.
Yeah, I have yet to meet a trans person that has said, "Hey, why don't you convert to our way of life?"
Yeah, and that's also what's really confusing about the people on the far right who think that there's sort of this social contagion. It's like, do you know that it's hard to transition? It's hard to be trans.
They know that because they make the rules.
It's really, it's easy to get down about all of that. I think it's helpful to try to keep a sense of humor about it, make jokes, connect with friends and peers, do activism, read about trans history. I find that to be really helpful. And
it's empowering.
Absolutely. It's easy, if we let those people get in our heads and they make, they're trying to say this is, a brand new made up thing that mm-hmm. like the kids are trying to turn into cats now or whatever, it's, I think, really helpful to look at our history and just remember all the ways there have always been trans people and people have always figured out how to be their true selves.
Right.
Even when it's been really hard and really dangerous.
Yeah. Did you hear the rumor about cats in schools?
Not only have I heard the rumor, I was, this summer I went to Tallahassee for one of the Medicaid hearings
uh-huh.
and somebody stood up and tried to say that, I believe she said her daughter was a school teacher and her daughter was being forced to have a litter box in the classroom
yes.
for one of the students. And it just...
How stupid is that?
It makes no... Again, have you ever been in an elementary school classroom?
Like, uh-huh.
I used to teach elementary.
Okay. I taught that as well. So you never had a litter box, did you?
No. I had my own bathroom. Oh. I could go to the bathroom.
Okay, that's nice.
And maybe they scratched. I don't know, but it's farcical to me. Like,
right. And it's the same kind of argument where people used to say, if we have gay marriage, next somebody's going to marry their dog. You know,
yes.
It's just another way to compare queer and trans people to animals.
Right.
And to make us seem ridiculous.
Well, it does. That goes beyond that. It makes the community almost a poison, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's horrific, mm-hmm. you know, because when you look at the far right, you know, a majority of them claim to be these very good, faithful Christian people. Mm-hmm. But the byproduct of their faith is that they demonize and ostracize and throw rocks at mm-hmm. A population that they know nothing about,
yeah.
right? And they misread scripture and all that other stuff. So,
yeah.
And then they take that and then they use that philosophy and that mm-hmm. theology and all that biblical stuff. Mm-hmm. And they make laws based on, now, mm-hmm. I can go on for days about that, but yeah. What are some ways that we might be able to do some political work to counterbalance mm. some of the negative stuff that's coming out of Tallahassee?
Yeah. So I think getting involved with any of our, you know, any of our community organizations is a great place to start. You know, there's lobby days coming up in, you know, after the new year, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of opportunities to build community and to get involved. So we've got, two local trans organizations, and we've got both Tranquility and the Unspoken Treasure Society. Both mm-hmm. groups are really active in the community. PFLAG is a great way for families and friends of queer and trans people to learn more about LGBT issues and get involved.
Now, are they back up and running?
They are back up and running. They're meeting at the Pride Center. It is on the other side of my sheet. So PFLAG meets the third Tuesday of each month at 7:00 at the Pride Center. And I know some of the folks that are involved in that group. Mm-hmm. It's a really great way for, you know, for family members to learn more. You know, your kid comes out or your spouse says they want to transition. And it's a great way to learn more and to get involved. And they've been really active in the community recently. They were active at Pride and mm-hmm. Really, really nice group of folks. So I think that's probably a really great place to start, is to get in touch with one of the organizations that's active, you know, meet people that are doing activism, and kind of take it from there. We think we need to see what's happening next politically, and mm-hmm. people can start to organize around what to do next.
Yeah. Well, I know Equality Florida is very active mm-hmm. In the political realm and yeah. staying on top of that. So if you're somebody who wants to know more information about what's going on, that's probably the best resource because
yeah.
they put it on the website, the upcoming mm-hmm. legislative actions that are being considered. and locally, you know, I guess it's about 4 years ago now, we organized the groups about, you know, banning conversion therapy by licensed mm-hmm. individuals. Oddly, to my surprise, we haven't been sued yet. Like mm-hmm. Tampa, their ordinance was overturned.
Mm-hmm.
I think last year, the year before. And there's a couple others, but we have not experienced that here, mm-hmm. and I'm glad that that hasn't happened. But, you know, what is conversion therapy, if you had to describe it?
Yeah, so I would say that conversion therapy is any therapy that tries to change somebody's gender identity or somebody's sexual orientation,
mm-hmm.
And even some that are, you know, going by different names. You know, I think there's, you know, there've been movements to create a form of therapy that's like watchful waiting, or I forget the exact word that they use, but sort of, you know, challenging a little bit or pathologizing, right?
Right.
You know, kind of assuming that a person's coming into therapy because there's some deep shit that they need to resolve and that's why they think they're gay.
Right.
But really they have daddy issues or they have trauma they haven't addressed or something. You know, so I would say any therapy that takes somebody's gender identity or someone's sexuality as, you know, as pathological or mm-hmm. as something to be changed, I would consider that to be conversion therapy. And, you know, we've seen from the evidence, you know, I've seen in my clinical practice that that's really harmful. And especially that often comes from a religious standpoint. You know, queer and right. trans people are taken to a religious leader or a religiously aligned counselor to try and, you know, and change themselves. And that does a lot of damage to people trying to be changed like that, because that's not how gender identity and sexuality works.
Right.
And for people who grew up in a religious community, that can really be damaging for somebody's sense of faith and their spirituality sure. and their ability to, you know, connect with a spirituality or a religion. So I always, you know, I've had clients who've been in, especially when they were younger, you know, been in some form of conversion therapy. Mm-hmm. And I always like to tell them, like, I'm so glad you came back to therapy, because, you know, it's brave to come back.
Right.
It doesn't have to be like this. Like, now you're here and now we can work on this.
Right.
And you can work on living the best life for yourself and not trying to change yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of one of the reasons I like being in our location that we're at, within a quote unquote church building, is that one of the positive experiences that we've had continuously is within the LGBTQIA pop coming into a building that historically has been oppositional to them and finding a place of acceptance. Yeah. And, you know, we don't do religious stuff in our practice, but for many of our clients, just coming into the building again has been a way to kind of get past some of that religious trauma that they've experienced growing up. I recall a client that I had for a couple of years who was repeatedly taken to his church where they would pray over him. Mm-hmm. And the damage that it did to him, I mean, there was no denying that he was gay. They would use him because he was a great singer. Mm-hmm. And so they would use him and allow him to sing. But the moment he got at one church, he got too effeminate, they fired him for doing that, or for being himself. And the religious community has just done an immense amount of harm, I think, over the years, and I think still does. Gainesville is a little unique, but we do have those pockets where they still believe in conversion therapy, like the Ignite Center. I don't know if you're familiar with them, right? Mm-hmm. So we did a protest at their event that they had. They didn't call it a conversion therapy conference, but the byproduct was they were telling their members and telling their attendees, you need to accept people who are identifying as gay or lesbian, bi, trans. You need to accept them into the community. But the ultimate goal was that they would be redeemed and convert. And for them, that meant leaving that lifestyle. And I hate that term, lifestyle. But that's not the only one. There was another one, or is there was another one, right, at that little church out in Jonesville. So that little Baptist church. And they had a conference not too long ago. And we chose to ignore that one because it was such a small church and we didn't want to give them added publicity. But it goes on all over the place. And I think, you know, for folks who are looking to be supportive, it's also being aware that this still happens. And it's not far from where they live right now. And so addressing it locally potentially means that you become more active in protesting, you become more active in being a vocal ally who opposes those sorts of actions. Because I think for those of us who are not in quote unquote marginalized communities, we can use our voice of privilege in a very powerful way, as long as that voice is based off of what the marginalized community needs us and wants us to say.
Absolutely. And I also want to give give some kudos to Gainesville, because we have a lot of really supportive, really progressive faith communities here as well. And I think that that's important to point out, and important, you know, that if people are looking for a spiritual home or a church or a synagogue, or they want to get involved in a spiritual community, that they keep looking and that they ask those questions and that they, you know, find a place that is going to feel good to them.
Yeah.
I'm active in the United Church of Gainesville.
I send everybody to UCG.
Yeah, I am certainly biased. And that's been really powerful for me, being mm-hmm. part of a really affirming, you know, faith yeah. community, and a community that is actively involved in LGBT issues.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm certainly not like telling my clients to go to church, but, you know, we definitely want people to know that there are faith communities that they can reach out to and become involved
sure.
in.
Sure. And it can be a great system of support. And,
absolutely.
Then you have the Trinity Metropolitan Community mm-hmm. Church, which is way out in the country. Mm-hmm. I love that congregation. They're unique, a mm-hmm. Little on the older side, but they're unique. I preached there a few weeks ago when Catherine was out of town. So, and then you've got also the Methodist Church downtown, mm-hmm. First United Methodist, and you know they've got their whole bit going on in their denomination about splitting and that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. But they have taken a stand there, and I think when I drove by last week or the week before, they actually had a pride flag flying out.
That's awesome.
And so they went through a huge struggle to discern that they wanted to be a very welcoming
yeah.
and accepting congregation. But yeah, so there are lots of faith communities that are there. The synagogue also mm-hmm. is very supportive. And then here, you know, I think I told you the Unspoken Treasure Society rents mm-hmm. here. And so I get to see Regina all the time.
And she's awesome.
She is awesome. She's loud. I keep telling her, you know, there's 10 volumes and you're at volume 9.5. Can you turn it down to like a 5? She goes, no, I have one volume and that's it. I'm like, okay. But she does a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work within the community. Mm-hmm. So being a part of a community doesn't necessarily, it's not about always the religion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just about being around supportive people.
Absolutely.
And that can be healing in and of mm-hmm. itself. But there are certain questions that if you're interested, we can help you with the questions to ask to discern mm-hmm. whether or not a community is welcoming and open, because most of them will say, we love all people, but in reality, they love the version that they're going to try to create you to be,
right?
Rather than who you are mm-hmm. as a person. So, I think that's a big piece. Earlier this week, we did a podcast on eating disorders.
Oh, interesting! Very important topic.
It is. It is an intuitive eating. I learned that term. I didn't know that before. So, one of the issues we talked about there was body image issues mm-hmm. within the LGBTQI. Particularly the gay and bi male population mm-hmm. and the challenges that are faced by that population mm-hmm. And the media portion, which kind of portrays that, you know, to be the perfect gay guy or bi guy, you have to have like this 24-pack abs mm-hmm. and muscles and in shape. And is that, do you find that that's still a concern for gay and bi men in particular?
I don't know that I can specifically speak to gay and bi men. In working with a lot of trans people, we talk a lot about body image and, mm-hmm. you know, where body image and dysphoria intersect. And that definitely, you know, that is very common. Eating disorders are, you know, pretty common for trans people compared to the general population. And so that can be a real challenge for people, especially if, you know, if living in your body is uncomfortable mm-hmm. because of dysphoria and because of transphobia, it's hard to, you know, get out there and exercise and move your body in ways that feel good. It's hard to inhabit your body safely and comfortably. So that's something that we talk about in therapy sometimes is, you know, what can you do? Mm-hmm. How can you, you know, how can you live in your body? How can you get some fresh air? And how can you work on, you know, being the healthiest version of yourself that you can?
Right. Yeah. Now, do you work with eating disorders?
Not directly. I definitely have had a handful of clients who, you know, bring up having symptoms of an eating disorder, having, you know, been, you know, in eating disorder groups before. Mm. It's not a population that I have any specialized knowledge in. But I've found that, you know, applying DBT and CBT kind of principles to that, you know, talking about being mindful, talking about understanding, you know, your body's cues and how you're feeling, you know, it really goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I told you my ADHD brain kicks in. So the transitional piece, right, mm-hmm. is I think sometimes people have a particular definition of transition mm-hmm. that exists. I think the general population thinks that if you're going to be trans, you have to make a full transition, mm-hmm. Whatever that means. I don't know what sure. that really means because I never ask how they define it. But what does transition mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so transition, you're right, can mean a lot of different things. And sometimes people use different terms. You know, sometimes people refer to gender-affirming care, gender-affirming health care. You know, I personally like the word transition. You know, I think it really conveys what a person is going through, which is mm-hmm. a major change or a shift. So transition can mean anything that somebody does to affirm their gender identity. It might be, you know, changing their name, whether legally or informally, mm-hmm. using different pronouns, experimenting with different outfits, taking hormone medication, taking puberty blockers, you know, for younger trans people, having surgery, changing your identity documents. And, you know, people definitely, in the past, there's been a lot of gatekeeping around, you know, an insurance will only cover surgery if right. you've been on this amount of hormones for this long and if you've taken these steps to legally transition, when that's not in line with people's actual goals, that's not in line with what's realistic for people. And so, you know, people will often prioritize what is most important for them,
right.
Which, you know, for a lot of people, you know, having surgeries, particularly having top surgery, can be a priority before starting hormones. You know, a person might want to, you know, be on hormones for a while before they start coming out to others. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a big part of, you know, of being in therapy for trans people, if, you know, if they're trying to sort that out, is talking through, you know, what are your options?
Sure.
What are your goals? What's most important to you? What's safest? What's financially accessible? And sort of making a plan.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it can be expensive.
Yes.
You know, simply changing your name is costs at least $400. And so, you know, people make decisions based on what's most important to them. But it's stressful and it's scary to walk around not looking like the person on your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Or having, you know, a driver's license that says one name, but a passport that says another. You know,
right.
it's easy, you know, when you're dealing with the legal system to sort of fall into a limbo where the name on some of your stuff doesn't match up, and that can cause a lot of that additional stress that trans people face.
Yeah.
And the fear of, you know, being discriminated against, being denied services or being denied treatment, having treatment not paid for because of some sort of paperwork issue.
Right.
So I, you know, I do my best to help clients sort of plan out and sort out, you know, if they're transitioning, you know, what that looks like for them. And I really do my best to share community resources as well. The Southern Legal Council is a great resource
sure
for people
is.
Who are changing their names. You know, we've got some great primary care doctors here in Gainesville who prescribe HRT, which I think is great. If you can find a doctor that you trust who's willing to do that, it's nice to have one person that you go to. Shout out to my doctor, Dr. Danielle Nelson, who is a true angel. So yeah, and working with a lot of young people, you know, some of them are sorting out stuff on their own for the first time, you know, so helping them to have realistic expectations, you know,
sure.
understand, you know, how to make a doctor's appointment, how to follow up, how to pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, you know, walking them through,
yeah.
developing those independent skills.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think with my clients, I do pretty much the same thing, which is, this is your journey.
Mm-hmm.
So let's create that map that's
yeah.
going to work for you. And I always highlight the fact that your map is going to look different from somebody else's map.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want to compare, you know,
Absolutely.
Our transitional process and our mm-hmm. journey. Because it's you and you're developing you.
Right.
And the body image does come into mm-hmm. play.
Yeah,
quite
for
frequently.
Sure.
And, you know, the challenges that have faced the trans community, particularly with, you know, whether it's transitioning, whether you're born male and transitioning to female, you know, historically they would have these parties where they would do injections mm-hmm. in their breasts to do that, and the dangers that are, the lengths to which people are willing to go sometimes can take them to some very dangerous places mm-hmm. in that transition. And so I always encourage them and tell them, please don't do those parties. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on what's available medically mm-hmm. and safely, because if you take that shortcut at the party, mm-hmm. it may feel good in the moment, but the byproduct is down the road, you're going to have some significant health complications.
Yeah.
And I know there was a lady in Orlando that was notorious for doing these injection parties. Mm. And the number of trans women who now are suffering the consequences is just phenomenal. Mm. And so that's the other part that I tell them is mm-hmm. stick with a doctor who has an MD behind their name mm-hmm. or the yeah. consequences can be significant. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
And another great resource is Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. They prescribe HRT. They can do virtual visits. And everyone I know who's gone to Planned Parenthood for any form of healthcare had an amazing experience.
Right, right.
And so for people who don't have insurance or don't want to use their insurance because maybe they're still on a family member's insurance, you can certainly reach out to Planned Parenthood. They do a great job.
They do.
And they rock.
They do rock. And they get a bad rep. Right, because the one, anyway, I'm not going to go down that road today, but the Planned Parenthood does a phenomenal job and does wonderful medical care for males, females, whatever. I mean, everybody mm-hmm. is served. It doesn't matter. And they have a broad range of services.
Yeah.
And I don't think that gets out in public enough.
Right, yeah, people don't realize that.
Yeah, so... So as we continue to work for, kind of helping the trans community, the LGBTQIA pop community, what are some wonderful tools that might be available to those of us who are allies, not really part of the community, but we're allies? How can we best support the community?
Excellent question. So you mentioned Equality Florida before. I think they're a great source of information for people who want to learn more about what's going on mm-hmm. throughout our state related to LGBT issues. Getting involved with a group like PFLAG is a great place to start. And reading about queer and trans history. You know, I think it is easy for people outside the community to think these are new issues sure. Or new identities when in fact, you know, learning the history I think is really exciting and really puts what's going on now into context. And, you know, if you know a trans person that doesn't have a lot of money, pay for their hormones.
Yes.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, supporting causes financially. Southern Legal Counsel, they do a lot of great work. Mm-hmm. Equality Florida, Lambda Legal, you know, there's a lot of organizations that you can donate to if you have the resources to do that, to be, you know, financially supporting the folks that are on the ground and in the courtroom.
Yeah. So I also work with the Human Rights Coalition, not the Human Rights Council, slight variation. and we do a community ID. That's what we're most
awesome.
Known for. And we have found a way that we can still, because our ID has to be in a specific format so mm-hmm. that the police will accept it. And so, but we have found a way to work with the trans population mm-hmm. So that we can have their chosen name as well as we have to have the mm-hmm. the name of, that's officially on their birth certificate mm-hmm. that, yeah. that's there. We have to have that. We would rather not, mm-hmm. but we have to. So if folks are looking for a valid ID, well, an ID that tends to be accepted throughout Gainesville mm-hmm. and Alachua County, the HRC does do that. Mm-hmm. So we do community drives. We got one coming up on Saturday that folks can set up appointments for. Or they can just go to hrcalachua.com
awesome.
And set up an appointment there. So that's another resource that's available.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
So, as we go forward, you know, the allies can best be supportive by connecting with these organizations mm-hmm. and use our money, use our voices, mm-hmm. use our person to walk with folks, mm-hmm. and also to attend to the political struggle which is taking place, so that we're not mm-hmm. silent on the issue.
Yeah,
because when our friends are suffering, we're suffering mm-hmm. along with them, a little bit differently, but we're still suffering. So that's good. So once again, if somebody wants to get in contact with you and set up an appointment, how do they do that? They send you an email at ezra.stone@gmail.com.
ezrastone.lcsw@gmail.com. And if you Google my name, you should find my website. There's not a lot of other Ezra Stones that are currently alive and active on the internet. so you can definitely reach out. There is a really high need for trans competent therapy. I'm usually pretty busy. But if you email me and I don't have any openings, I can certainly help people find a counselor, find community resources, find things that are going on locally if it's a person that's in the Gainesville community. And that's another great thing about my Rainbow Resilience group and about some of these other groups in the community. You know, if you can't afford therapy or you can't find a therapist or you just, need a little engine tune-up once a month.
Right.
It's really great to have these places that you can go and connect with people and share coping skills and feel a little bit less alone.
Yeah, yeah. And the Pride Center is, they have the drop-in hours, but do they have regular hours that they're open?
Right now, they're open during those drop-in hours. And then when there's one of those events that we talked about, they are going to be expanding the hours that they're open when people can just stop by, I think, early next year. So for the most updated information about the Pride Center, you can go to GainesvillePride.org. They've got an email list that they send out every so often mm-hmm. with lists of all the meetings and events that are coming up, on Instagram or Facebook. So that's a great way to stay on top of what the Pride Center is doing. And also they promote other, events and stuff that are going on in the community.
Fantastic.
So definitely stay in touch and keep an eye on the internet and get involved.
That's right. Well, anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure we chat about?
I would say I guess the last thing that I would say is just that even when it's bad out there, and especially when it's bad out there, it's important to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we talk about that a lot in therapy, trying to get enough sleep, drink enough water, eat your vegetables, go get some fresh air.
Vegetables, really?
And it's easy to get caught up in the thought of everything's so fucked, I can't do that.
Right.
It's like when everything's fucked, that's when you need to do it the right. most.
And it's those simple things that
really
matter a lot, mm-hmm. right? And it's staying in a structure and staying on schedule.
Absolutely.
Right, because when you don't have that, you don't have your own map to
right.
go through.
And, I think often on the internet, people will be like, oh, you're depressed, just go take a walk. And that sounds very silly and dismissive, but honestly, we say the same thing in therapy.
Yes.
It's like you need to go get some fresh air, you need to drink a glass of water, you need to go to bed. And so just, remembering to take care of ourselves, especially when we're feeling stressed and burned out and overwhelmed by the world.
Focus on the things you can change and have control over.
Absolutely.
And identify the things long term that we can work on together.
Absolutely.
So
easier said than done, though.
It is. It is. And I say that to my clients. And they have this phrase. A lot of my clients have this phrase now that they say, what would Larry say? Because they know what I'm going to tell them all the time, because mm-hmm. I'm like a broken record. Are you sleeping? Are you eating? Are you mm-hmm. are you exercising? Are mm-hmm. you doing the things that you need to do?
Are you trying to control someone else's behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway. Well, I appreciate you being here. It was a pleasure to have you. A pleasure
thank
to
you
meet
so much.
You. And I hope we'll continue the conversation and mm-hmm. and collaboration.
Yeah, definitely. It was really nice to meet you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, anytime. And again, I'm Larry, and I am the clinical director, executive director, and trash taker outer here at the Gainesville. I don't take out the trash anymore. I used to. At the Gainesville Community Counseling Center, you can find us online at www.gainesvillecounselingcenter.com. Or you can call us at 352-448-9120. And that, my friends, ends our podcast of Welcome to the New You. Peace.